The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Hello, listener, and welcome to this, the mega ultra bonus listener idea episode of The Big Red Couch. We've had a backlog, as it were, of ideas that have come in, and they've always been on the, yes, we will totally talk about these on an episode. And then because we're just a little bit crap, we keep forgetting. So we're going to do the mega ultra bonus episode.
The first mega bonus ultra episode, because the one does it anymore when the backlog fills up again.
You mean we're not going to pretend to go with the fiction that we're totally not going to do this exact thing? Yeah, that's fair.
The hope is that we won't, because that's part of the reason that we're building up a buffer.
So yeah, that's true.
But the reality is that we might.
It might happen. It's true.
Yes. Okay, so we've got a number of ideas that have come in. On the microphone today, we have Craig.
Tanya.
And Kim.
Okay, so I've got three to pick from. All right, I'm going to go with this one. This comes to us from Blinkdog, who is on the Fear the Boot forums?
Forodity? That's not really a word. Anyway.
No. It doesn't sound like a word. Okay, this comes to us from Blinkdog and is talking about the Graboids episode.
Awesome.
Which I think was Graboids Take Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And Blinkdog writes, "Your Graboids episode really has me thinking. Now, keep in mind, I prefer games with a higher realism level, and the survival genre is kind of my thing. If the Graboid is based on the Mongolian death worm concept, they would not find New York City a favourable environment. Too much water and hard rock. However, they would easily adapt to drier areas, like the Midwest, which is consequently the general grain belt and the westward cattle country. If you had an infestation in this area, they would easily deplete cattle, cause havoc for people trying to farm the area, and cause huge economic problems. If the world lost the grain belt, the effects would be felt worldwide. If the infestation is worldwide in such areas like the Middle East, much of Australia, heck, any area of the world where it is not swampy and rocky, would be a very dangerous place to live or extract the natural resources that the whole world needs.
Hmm.
I also envisage thumpers, like in Dune, to attract them so they can be hunted. You could also have the military response, which would at first be ineffective. It's hard to fight something underground, tanks could be dug under and fall into a huge pit, and would also attract their attention. They vibrate the ground like crazy when they're nearby. Plus, you would have a huge refugee crisis, everybody moving to mountainous areas for maximum safety."
Interesting. I like the idea of this being a slow apocalypse kind of thing.
Mm.
That's kind of what it sounds like to me. And people sort of having this change of milieu where your food is no longer cattle because cattle becomes food for the next thing up the chain, so you're going to have to eat that.
Yeah, the whole economic impact is kind of interesting. I mean, I'm getting... It's probably just the bit about the refugee crisis and the sort of the worldwide collapse, but it does put me in mind of the book of World War Z and the whole how do we move our population around to create safe refuges. But yeah, if you've got something that can't live in...
city areas, rocky areas.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I don't know. I mean, I think you could get a really good game out of the idea that we live in a small town, and by small I mean you've got hundreds of people rather than thousands. It's too small to have enough concrete to keep the Graboids out, so we need to move across roads that go across open plain. They're not necessarily going to be safe for anything that's heavy enough to roll. Yeah.
So if you dial down the sensitivity of the Graboids just a little bit, so that if you're on foot...
If you're on foot on tarmac, you're probably fine.
Nice.
I'm part of the problem with Graboids in the movie was that you had five of them in a relatively small area. So the chances that they would be far enough away, or that you would be far enough away from a Graboid to not be sensed, was kind of low. In the wide open plains, you've got a window before their population is dense enough that you can't move around.
Interesting.
But it also means that if you're not moving things by plane, you're not moving things after a while.
Yeah. You're looking at plane and boat.
Yeah.
all of a sudden those old river networks become very important, don't they?
They really do.
Well, that actually made me think of, if you advance the timeline some, you could have raft cities out on the ocean.
Oh, nice.
And people making these kind of dangerous inland expeditions, kind of the equivalent of the whaling boats, except going inland to try to get supplies and stuff.
Nice. Okay, so you've got raids on arable land to do a quick wild wheat collection.
Yeah.
That is something nice. I was wondering. I'm not sure what happens to monocrop, you know, monoculture croplands once you've had to abandon them with no warning.
I'll tell you what happens. They don't stay monocrop for long.
Okay. So, yeah, you potentially... Even casting aside the raft cities, though, that's kind of cool. The idea of people coming in, coming into what is now the wilderness, but is realistically the grain belt from the cities, moving quietly, moving cautiously, trying to gather, hunter gathering.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's.
I've thought of areas of the world where industry could still exist.
Hmm.
I was thinking that if you can't transport things via road because these things will find you, there are parts of, say, North America and other equivalent things where the ground gets frozen enough in winter that these things aren't going to be able to move very far.
Okay, so far enough north that you've got part-time tundra, or far enough towards the mountainous sections... You're probably good.
For half of the year, you can move things around the place. I was thinking that it would be an entertaining game to set ice road truckers or something in, where it's kind of a thing of, you don't want to break down, because you break down on the ice, that's bad. You leave the ice, that's worse.
Nice.
True, if you keep far enough ahead of the buggers.
Or you could get an inspector's game out of that.
Yeah?
Well, inspectors is set around the idea of it being reality television. Ice Road Truckers is a reality television show. You've got people talking about the problems and the excitement and the joys of seasonal trucking on a road that isn't there half the year.
Nice. I'm imagining, you know, just sort of thinking about the rocky territory and realizing, okay, so the bits of the Auckland Isthmus are basically okay. Most of what we've got here is volcanic.
Yeah.
Or at least there's a layer of volcanic, so it can be chewed through.
It would take a while, though.
Yeah, it'd take a while, and it's probably not that much fun for the up-and-coming graboid. Further south, on the other hand?
Even then, we've got areas of farmland, but it's a relatively thin layer of ash-based soil over caldera rock.
That's true.
And clay?
South Island's fucked.
Yeah.
Because that's
only one coast.
Yeah.
Well, the other coast is vertical.
That's true. Yeah, the Canterbury region isn't going to be doing too well.
Yeah.
Australia, on the other hand.
What are how the graboids feel about sand? Because if they're not fans, then pretty much the entire, Perth's fine. There's no soil there.
The Mongolian desert it's rock and sand.
Ah, well, that's more of an issue.
Yeah.
We've obviously gone on a lower realism level than Blink Dog would have gone with, though admittedly, I am imagining trying to draw up the Millennium's End hit location template for a graboid.
You'd need different sizes for different ages of graboid.
Yeah, you just scale it. You obviously need them in different positions.
Something from couch size right the way up to, like, truck size.
You know, it eats you starting with your bottom, coming up from below posture, or the basking in the sunshine posture. You know, you need a few different designs of graboid. Can't believe I just said that.
Probably have like three or four hit locations around the head end and then segment by segment.
Yeah. There's going to be some heavily armored segments, and you may need to come up with different damage multipliers for the different segments because they don't really map that well to...
No.
I was just imagining from what you were talking about a graboid in Paint Me Like One of Your French Girls pose. The pose.
And now we're back to Ben's suggested graboid casting couch scene.
Which he preemptively denied responsibility for.
Yes, I spotted that too. Okay, well, your small town one very much sounds like a how do we evacuate?
Hmm.
But the...
It gives you a set endpoint. It gives you a storyline and a goal, a major goal. Whether you do that as a single episode game or whether you do it as... If it's a quick run, then that's kind of a 1-3 shot. If it's the magnificent journey with a town full of people.
Journey to the West kind of territory. Actually, if you think of where you start, Journey to the West makes sense, because if you can just get yourself into the Sierras, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Probably don't want to have been at Burning Man when it started out.
How do Mongolian deathworms deal with salt alkaline?
I don't know.
Because for all we know, Utah's fine. Because salt.
Yeah, but what if they're attracted to raiders?
That would be terrible.
Yeah.
I'm kind of stuck on the idea of... I mean, there's the Ice Road Truckers thing, which is just neat. Because it means that Canada becomes this industrial base where half the year you can just do whatever the hell you want because the worms are sitting there going, soon, but can't otherwise move. And at the same time, I like the idea of advancing the timeline and basically having a context where you could do Moby Dick on land.
Interesting.
So that you've got
hunting
people,
the white graboid.
Yes, the great white graboid. The great white worm, I was thinking of that. But you could bring in all sorts of mythology for it. But just the idea that you've got people who are not necessarily seafarers, but they're very experienced in sea-level weather patterns. And then you get the experienced landlubbers who are doing oh shit, the wind's up, the sky's turned green, and everyone's going, yeah, and we need to get underground.
We can't get underground, that's graboid territory. Ooh, that would be bad.
Yeah.
That, ooh.
So, that kind of thing where you've got people who, the weirdos who keep going back on land, but who have this kind of grasp of, the weather works differently here, there's stuff you have to pay attention to.
Hmm.
All the bird life's gone quiet and everyone's gone, just, that means that we're not the only things out here. Whoa, magic.
Dude.
Interesting. Okay.
Whereas I'm kind of liking the raiding party on the agricultural land from a small city.
Mm-hmm.
Though presumably if the graboids are working at it, over time, the concreted area is going to decrease. You know, if they start deliberately undermining buildings.
Yeah, which means the small towns are going to be the first to go, assuming there's anything to attract them there.
Yeah, so you need places on actual rock outcrops.
Mm.
Yeah, so kind of liking the idea of groups moving, either moving very, very quietly, so taking a long time to do the foraging, or potentially loading up a bunch of people in a truck, driving it there at a speed faster than a graboid, the foragers get off, and then much like the thumpers from Dune, the people in the truck are basically, their job is to keep the worms busy and following them.
So they do donuts over there, over in an area where nobody's going to be while other people...
Or they drive a loop around the various roads, dragging behind them a selection of pipes and anvils and that kind of thing. Just anything that hits the ground hard. And potentially just something that has a bunch of big trip hammers that hang off the back of a truck.
Ooh, nice.
So you've just got this regular thudding that goes on as they drive around and other people are trying to walk cautiously through the farmlands, gathering what they can. I mean, it's a bit...
I've got a sting in the tail. Well, I've got a sting in the tail for that one. So if you figured out this is a way you can survive, because so far all of the graboids have been attracted to but not able to take the truck down, eventually you have a big daddy come in.
Mm.
Who thinks, yeah, I can swallow an elephant.
Yeah, or I can undermine that road, because I think that's what it did for them in the movie.
Mm.
Was they were doing fairly well with this vehicle that was proof against being eaten and buried, but it wasn't proof against the road being undermined.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of cool. I'm not...
So we got a couple of game ideas out of that.
Yeah, we do. Tend to go terribly high realism survival-y thing just left to our own devices.
I'm probably the closest to that. And yeah. You could do a hell of an all-flesh-must-be-eaten game. Because, it's stretching the point a little bit, but to all intents and purposes, you can treat the graboids as analogous to the zombies in zombie films. They fulfill a very similar plot role.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine getting sort of a one- or two-session game out of Let's Hunt the Graboids. But anything more than that, I would want there to be other plots, elements, because otherwise it's just... Or frankly, first-person shooters exist for a reason.
They're cathartic.
Mm.
Yeah, I think if you're doing the Magnificent Journey, where your dog, cat, and budgie are, sorry, dog, and cat are on their way to a new home, mm-hmm. except you've got a couple of hundred villagers, then I think you've got each session arc could be a different need that needs to be met. So we're on the road, we have to stay quiet, we've got hungry kids and not enough to feed them.
Mm.
We're on the road, we need to stay quiet. How do we clear the road so that we can get everybody past without making noise?
We've picked up some sort of illness is reaching through. We need to find a hospital.
Yeah.
We need to find an unlooted, uncollapsed hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I'm also desperately trying to remember what the three critters in the Gary Larson Incredible Journey was. I remember there was a cow and there was a giant squid. I can't remember what the
other one is either.
Could have been a cat or something. Cow, a giant squid, and a cat, and some people looking on and saying, must be another one of those Incredible Journey things. I think, that would be a fun one to do as a sort of medium-term campaign, the journey to safety.
I still think the Ice Road Truckers would be more fun. Personally, your mileage may vary.
I would definitely like to try the Ice Road Truckers. the Ice Road Truckers one?
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's next? Or have we...
I think, we've reached the end of Blink Dog's letter, message, email. And thank you very much, Blink Dog.
Yay!
Because that was kind of cool. Yeah.
I got a few here from Hopeless, who comes to us from...
The post...
Mongoose, I think.
That's right, Mongoose Publishing Forums.
Mongoose do...
Traveller.
Right, okay.
And Paranoia.
Oh, yes.
Mm. And other things
all
as well.
All sorts of stuff.
Paranoid about travel. Wait, never mind.
He had some things to say about our mainstreaming monsters episode.
Ooh.
Okay. I think there may have been another message that somehow didn't quite get posted, because what's here feels like it's the second half of an idea. So I'll try and...
Fill in as best you can?
I'll try and fill in as best I can. Hopeless says, I was thinking there's a peace treaty overseen by half-breeds for the most part, but both sides want to end the treaty and either drive the other out or subtly conquer the other's reality. I picture the most effective deterrent is also figuratively the least diplomatic overseer imaginable. This is offset for him being the most prolific powered killer because he's honourable, chivalrous, and overprotective to those he considers under his protection, including family, which is why he's divorced. His daughter is the only person who ever decked him and lived. I keep picturing a game where comedy and horror are intermixed and literally anything can happen, whether the Matrix or fending off an invasion from something similar to Darkseid, and they're not the worst threat. I imagine an opening scene where they're just delaying an extra plane at invasion of New Jersey so they can slam a plane at door in the villains' faces, only for them to learn on the other side that humanity are about to detonate a nuke and at their now sealed exit. They have to find a way to save all of New Jersey, only to be blamed if they survive. Can't help imagining that humanity are far worse monsters than the monsters. Maybe a bit of Whedon is needed. Yeah, with that one I kind of... sort of seeing a portal between a monster realm and sort of contemporary humanity.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody seems to pick on New Jersey for some reason. Sure. I don't fully get, but then... context problem. Except for the one person I actually met from New Jersey, he seemed very nice. Yeah, I don't know. Does anybody get the Dark Side reference?
They're the place that Clive Barker's story with the puzzle box?
Cenobites.
I think that's where Cenobites come from.
Okay.
I could be wrong with that, and I wouldn't quote me.
You wouldn't put money on it?
I wouldn't put money on it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that does sound... Portal to Monster Realm and things kind of bleeding across. So, is New Jersey where the Pine Barrens are?
Yes.
Okay, so that's starting to stitch together in my mind. If you've got a portal out in a, as I understand it, somewhat creepy place and some level of intermingling of monsters who, frankly, aren't that bad, and humanity who are, I think the phrase from Men in Black was dumb, panicky apes...
predictably reacting to what they're looking at rather than who these people are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yes, some level, from what Hopeless has said, some level of elected interface between the two, of the biggest hearted bastard you can find.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm getting from there.
I was seeing it as something of a, like a border garrison. The way Berlin was when it was split, where you had a garrison from one side and a garrison from the other kind of facing off. So if you've got the head of one of those garrisons being said GM NPC, I don't know, the way that Hopeless has described him, it sounds like he would be a wonderful way to kick the players into action. But at some point, having him implicated in something dirty or bumped off might be the way to keep momentum of the game going.
Yeah. Something that it brings to mind is sort of travel documentary thing at one point, which showed the incredibly elaborate closing of the gate type ceremony at the border, I think between one of the borders between India and Pakistan, with these elaborate and very tightly choreographed shows of offence and insult at the people on the other side, and you're getting within millimetres of them without moving, and
lots of regimented foot stamping and huffing and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, an extremely military pit being thrown on a daily basis where people can take photos. For some reason, it puts me in mind of that, and the idea that there is this weird, this portal to the monster realms in New Jersey, and the sort of the garrisoning between the two, and that this, if I was going to turn that into a game, I would have something occur that forces these forces on the other side, on either side, to do something together. Is kind of where I'd go with that.
And if you've got political or if you've got pressures from the populations of both sides who are both going, those guys coming over here stealing our stuff on both sides of the gate.
They're taking our jobs. What are you talking about? It's a frost giant. What possible job do you do that it could take?
I sell freezing cards.
DR bloodication, yes.
Anyway. yeah, I had wondered if it would be interesting to have a mixed garrison sort of guarding the sides. So you've got a power structure that is attempting to hold both sides apart so that they can just get on with being a border crossing.
Mixed garrison from the point of view of soldiers from both sides, or mixed from the point of view of the half-breed situation that Hopeless mentioned?
I was thinking soldiers from both sides, but depending on how long this has been going on, you could end up with half-breeds.
Depending on how well the inter-force relations were going.
Indeed.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was thinking if you have a reasonably long-term campaign, you can have people noticing small effects of something nefarious trying to cross in either direction, sort of perfectly ordinary citizens trying to get back to their home reality. And being helped out by people who... All you have to do is take this with you and we'll pay your visa fee. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is that you need to open the gate, if it's that kind of gate.
Yeah, just deliver this to my dear old gran. Oh, she loves her earth donuts. That's totally what's in this bag. Yes, sirree.
Indeed. I was thinking if it's a long campaign, you can scale up from that sort of thing to full-scale riots of either people wanting free access, free unmonitored access either way, or people wanting the gate slammed shut.
Nice.
Possibly both. I don't know.
Sorry, I'm just trying to imagine a suitable name for doing a Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall moment. but I can't decide what colour the skin of the person doing the shouting is.
What, from green to...
Well, whether it's a...
Human shades of mottled pinky brown.
Whether it's the governor of New Jersey shouting, Archduke Zubasis, tear down this wall! Or whether on the other side it's somebody shouting, Governor Sumner!
Governor such and such.
Tear down this wall, yes.
Or both. For all we know, this has been going on long enough that neither municipal side actually has a say in this. And the garrison has become its own thing.
Nice. The garrison is keeping the sides apart because that is what they have always done. Shades of Sir Didymus on the bridge, but yes.
So there's that one.
Hmm.
Any things to add or change?
Not for that one, no. I think I've beaten that idea into something around this.
Hopeless's next email. If I tried running a game based on the Tomorrow People, they would start off with one special ability and not the full package like the new series. I'd make it look like the Tomorrow People are the threat, and then reveal why they're a threat by showing humanity and extraterrestrials are responsible for the why they're behaving why they're, like they are. I'm thinking a Xavier and Magneto outlook for the Tomorrow People groups, except I'd have Xavier killed by his half-brother, who is using Cerebro to hunt the Tomorrow People, but has to use enslaved Tomorrow People to not only use Cerebro, but also to fight the alien menace. But they can't do so overtly, as that's counter to his group's human-first outlook. So it's up to the heroes to defeat not only the alien invaders, the Tomorrow Terror and the Tomorrow Terrorists, but also human-first foes of the eventual series. Kaiju and giant robots, ? There's a lot of interesting ideas in there. It's quite dense, though.
Yes.
And seems like it's shifting from inspired by X-Men to including very specific details.
I was saying those more as examples, but...
Okay.
Yeah, the idea of good side and bad side of the Tomorrow People movement, because, yeah, I haven't seen the new series, but to be blunt, the old series, they were a bit goody-good. I mean, okay, it was written in, but they were still a bit... It's still a bit goody-good. But, yeah, the idea of if you've got a good side and a bad side, and then you're finding out that even the good side is kind of being...
A bit douchey.
Is being manipulated for somebody else's ends.
Okay.
And in the middle of that, you've got other things going on. So it's effectively people trying to keep a lid on two or three boiling pots at once.
I wonder who your players would be in this case. Or would you set it up so that you have players with character sheets from each group? So you do a suite of sessions as the Tomorrow Terrorists, a suite of sessions as the Hunters, a suite of sessions as... mundane law enforcement trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Kind of switch between them.
I don't know. I mean, you could either make a case for one of the very narrative characters or groups pointed at each other kind of games that is wrapped around conflict. I cannot think of a specific example of a game at this moment, unfortunately, but they are out there. You'd possibly need to pick one that doesn't have the inevitable descent to shrieking madness. Yeah, as far as not that.
And if this is all taking place in a world where if you told someone you had powers, they'd laugh at you and put you in the funny farm. Or somewhere between the two. And if powers are a known thing, then you can reach for the wall on the big wacky stuff.
Yeah, if you go with the X-Men approach of powers are a known but feared thing, which... I think is what's going on with... at least is what I'm getting from Hopeless's suggestion.
Yeah.
Probably the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants does not have a shiny set of offices in New York, but they've probably got a website.
Probably.
I'm trying to remember, what episode did the Tomorrow People...
That's also Mainstreaming Monsters.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. All right. Yeah, I think I'd either want something that allows you have people playing or possibly handing around the viewpoint of groups and are sort of aimed at each other, or go with almost the opposite extreme and go with, this is a very small cell within...
A particular group.
Yeah, within a particular group. Probably the good guys, because who doesn't like playing... Well, actually, there are people who don't like playing the good guys, but assuming you want to play the good guys, yeah, probably
within... I thought the weren't really good guys in this.
The gooder guys?
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to you're trying to promote your own agenda, which is that mutants are a bit all right, actually, and should be just allowed to get on with things, as opposed to the mutants should be rulers of all they survey, and that especially includes you mundanes. Yeah, so there's that faction. There's the, we should totally use our resources to put me at the top of the organization so that I can be world president, because honestly it'll be better for everybody, faction. And also there are these enormous creatures escaping from an undersea event. Who's going to deal with those? Yeah.
It allows for big wackiness and situations where you might need to make less than comfortable bedfellows in order to go fight the big monsters.
Ooh.
Because you just don't have the power by yourself.
Nice. You're thinking something where you've got the constant uneasy and shifting alliance.
But in between Awuga calls to deal with the monster, you're back to being enemies. And
nice.
Fighting for top dogginess.
Hmm.
That's kind of interesting. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't know how to make a game out of that, but... Mm.
You mean mechanically or...
Yeah.
Plot?
Both, actually. I mean, it gives you a background, but it doesn't give you the finer details of pressure points that a PC group could work on.
Much as I hate to run with the big red couch broken record vis-a-vis the Fate system...
let the players come up with that for themselves. Understood.
Well, I was thinking you could do worse than just having a sodding enormous social conflict map. And so you're doing your gaming stuff, but you're moving people around and groups around this social conflict map based on potentially how they are seen by the populace on one axis and, you know, where their goals are on another.
Mm.
Yeah, you could borrow from the Dresden Files, overt, covert, and change versus status quo axes, because from that point of view, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants is right up there on the change. Yeah, it's in a very similar place to the Brotherhood of Warm Fluffy Mutants on the how we want the that we want things to change.
But it's only
overt, covert that separates them.
Yeah, that's true.
And if they're operating in the open, then they're operating almost in an almost identical space on the graph.
Interesting.
So that actually would suggest that graph doesn't work very well. But
the other one that might be an interesting point of inspiration would be Krieg Zeppelin Valkyrie from the Fate Worlds books, on the grounds of there you've got people who are working together. It's very Battlestar Galactica on purpose, so that you've got people who are in intense competition with each other, but united for specific military goals, so that you've got the fighting monsters thing. And then as soon as that stops...
It's back to infighting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
And with particular mechanics about how those two completely independent sections interact with each other. I mean, in the Krieg Zeppelin Valkyrie context... It's everybody has an aspect of, I will prove that I am the greatest pilot in the world. And you've got...
Because shared aspects are game gold.
They are, and I think you've got Hemingway on board as a reporter.
Interesting.
And so there's mechanics about interacting with, you know, yes, we worked together during the battle, but who did best? Whose kills were those? Did anyone else see those kind of thing? But in this context, it would be
Boy, confirm my kills.
It would be a bit broader.
Hmm.
Yes, we have the crack pilot Charles here, who currently holds the Krieg Zipper, the record for the number of absolutely amazing kills scored when there was absolutely nobody around to witness them.
Later, it turns out that he was leaving the hangar and nipping behind the mountain and basically sitting there until it was all over.
Pretty much, yes. Occasionally trying to shoot at pigeons.
Monstrous pigeons. Totally monstrous pigeons.
Clearly.
Hmm.
Propelled by occult super science.
Okay.
Or something.
Yeah, Krieg Zeppelin Valkyrie might be a way to go for system.
Hmm.
Mm. System mods, yeah.
As a place to build from.
Yes, because that allows you to have a bunch of people who totally want to stop the horrifying monsters. And yet...
have completely conflicting agendas.
Mm.
Yeah. Cool.
There
is a third thing, also from Hopeless. The Godzilla movie wasn't bad, save for the ending. Have that survive, and the PCs are a group who run into other irradiated monsters, a la sci-fi's monster movies, except, like Tremors, they learn the government or corporations are the reasons the monsters are coming out into the open to escape their persecutors. This leads to the PCs figuring out a way to befriend the monsters who aren't interested in wiping out all humanity, and like the Godzilla animated series, they're needed to counter alien invaders who, using the movie outcome, cyber-zombified the original Godzilla to fight Babyzilla. And here I was remembering Monsters vs. Aliens, but maybe they're able to hide their alter egos so they can live semi-ordinary lives. Okay, that sounds like the monsters might actually be the players.
Yeah.
Mm. I did see the bits of the Godzilla animated series.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Maybe we should hunt that down and...
Investigate it further.
Yeah, to see whether my memory can actually be trusted in the same way that it cannot be trusted for so many, many things that I honestly remember as being good.
I was under the impression that you honestly remembered them being... those movies being bad and that you wanted us to share in your pain.
I don't know which movies you're talking about.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians comes crashing to mind.
Okay, well look, if you're going to bring actual fact into the argument, then we're just going to get nowhere here. Okay.
Yeah, I think that one stands. You've got people who are secret monsters who occasionally get the monster sign in the air and have to playing against the clouds and have to go out and fight evil.
Mm-hmm.
This, I would almost have to run this in some sort of very comedic way, because I'm just imagining the monster sign flashing in the skies and mild-mannered insurance underwriter John G. Odzilla saying, I have to go, sort of racing down an alleyway.
Into a parking structure because, let's face it, there are no
suitably sized
telephone booths anymore.
Yep. And, as it were, monstering out.
Indeed.
Meanwhile, across town, ace reporter Martin Othra.
Lovely.
I may not be treating this with the seriousness to which it deserves.
I'm actually seeing this using TFOS as a system. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe something silly in the Supers line. There's a variety of Supers games that might cover it.
TFOS would probably do it. It did have some interesting mechanics along that line.
Hmm.
And complete indestructibility of people.
Which you'd need if it was going to be silly.
You would. Also, is it a bit like the Hulk? Does mild-mannered...
John G. Odzilla
actually retain control when he monsters out?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Or is it like the Incredible Hulk, where there's a lot less...
It's variable depending on how pissed he is at the time.
Yeah, and what's he specifically pissed at. or is it a case where he monsters out, defeats the alien menace, and, accidentally pile drives it into that really annoying car yard down the road that has the lights on... shining right into his bedroom window. Yeah, this kind of thing.
Okay, so you're tossing up here whether once you've monstered out, you actually need the Japanese Defense Forces to herd you into a valley so you can calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Or whether that's a total fiction.
A polite fiction. Yep. And I'm also getting shades of The Big Guy and Rusty.
What's that?
Animated show. I don't think I ever caught the first few episodes, so there may be a better explanation. But it's essentially where you've got Rusty the boy robot, who is an actual intelligent robot.
Okay.
Prior to Rusty, there was the miracle of technology, which was the big guy, this big humaniform fighting robot, triumph of military technology, which is a total fake.
It's a walking
guy
suit.
A guy in a walking suit.
Hi.
It was also a PR exercise. I mean, the thing does actually fight. It's just not artificially intelligent. And so you've got a show where you've got Rusty the boy robot.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the big guy who, because he's a much older model of robot, has to spend a lot of time powered down being worked on by his mechanic.
Totally mechanic.
Mechanic. And in conclusion, mechanic. It was an interesting dynamic for a show.
Huh.
They decided to keep it from Rusty. I don't know why, but they did.
Because pointless secrets were the style of the time.
Yeah, for all I know, the show's still going, but I'm kind of getting that vibe with...
It's reminding me of there's a webcomic called The Specialists, where you have people with superpowers in the Second World War who were in a PR squad, where it's currently at. They're about to be activated, as it were, one of the characters. This is not a spoiler at all. One of the characters is a kid who has made a fighting robot that, for the most part, is him wearing a fighting suit.
Right. Okay.
There's some hints that that might change, but, yeah.
Shades of Captain America, movie at least.
Yeah, but they go somewhere really nice with it, so...
Cool.
It's a comic that I enjoy. I'm wondering if the John G. Oddzilla game could be played slightly more seriously.
Shudder to think how it can be played any less seriously. to be blunt, just requiring formal dress would make the thing more serious than what I came up with.
I don't know. And if you've got people who are... If you kind of separate the monsters from the players who are humans working for a group, and part of what they're doing is, I don't know, a psychic meld with one of their monsters, so that part of the game is investigation and sleuth work, but you also have the, okay, we are now ready to pull the trigger on an operation, we suit up, we connect, and bring in the monsters from wherever they furlough.
Okay.
Bring in the monsters from the monster farm.
Are they directly controlling the monsters, or more giving helpful suggestions as to, hey, you might want to attack that thing?
I think it's an uneasy connection. So you're attempting to control something that may buck at any moment.
Right.
If you push it too hard. But I think that may be the consequence for a catastrophic failure at the dice level. A bad roll gets you a rampage.
Interesting.
It's possible you could have micro rampages. No, I can bring it back, but while you're not doing that, whatever it is that you were supposed to be controlling is continuing. And
Yeah. It's the monster just ate a building.
With people inside. It was the orphanage! sorry, Psychonauts weird, flashback.
Dreadful people.
That sequence in Psychonauts is fabulous.
It was the orphanage for puppies.
Yeah.
What was the Gargantuan?
Yeah.
Gogalore. Sorry, Gogalore, my mistake.
It was a good game. I'm looking forward to there being a sequel. Tim Schafer should make a sequel.
Hint.
Anyway, so yeah, that's what we've got from Hopeless.
Cool.
Woo. Thank you, Hopeless.
Yeah. Great ideas. Thanks for letting us share them.
I have one from Riesel, who I think I have the handle right of, who submitted one for Operation Chocolate Teapot. She said that it sounds like a Brit rom-com about the most unlucky yet persevering person to ever hit OK Cupid, presumably played by Martin Freeman or Simon Pegg. I don't think you could make a game out of it, but I definitely watch it. And from back in the dim distant past of November 2013, Tonya made a response.
Oh, wait, I remember this. I think. Something about a video, one of those video board games that you used to be able to get back in the day?
Yeah, you want me to read out what you wrote?
Yes, please.
This feels like one of those board/video cassette games to me. Your players might be in the roles of Shoulder Angel, Shoulder Demon, Murphy, or the Foot in Mouth Fairy. The target, this year's Peg or Freeman, has a scene where they're setting up their account and the scene pauses at critical moments. The players play a round of the board game that will determine which of them manages to screw up the guy's plans worst, and which button you press on your remote to view the result. I figure you can get it to run through the whole story the players have created at the end of the game, so you can really get a feel for what you've done to the guy. It also means you get several slightly different outcomes should you choose to replay.
Yes, I remember that now. Yeah. That's sort of like an interactive movie sort of thing.
I like that idea. I'm a little stymied for this one because I'm completely unfamiliar with OKCupid, so it's a dating thing?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the dating sites. Okay, we could do dating site. Was it the thing that Zerka mentioned?
Everyone is John?
Oh, yeah, Everyone is John.
Mm.
If you took that and made it less...
harrowing?
Yeah. less harrowing and madness-inducing.
Make it a little more Herman's Head.
Yeah, something like that. So you've got the different bits of Simon or Martin...
Mm-hmm.
Attempting to put together and then presumably respond to their OKCupid account.
Yeah.
That could work. I mean, going back to the Operation Chocolate Teapot, the untold story thing, I'm trying to think of how you could have a dating site thing with that kind of hapless person and have it come together almost like a heist movie that they are completely unaware of their participation of. It's just that the end of the heist is... actually connecting with somebody else.
Interesting. Oh, okay. I thought for a moment you were going to say that this is someone who has been selected from OkCupid by a heist team as cover.
Actually, that's how you do it.
Yeah, so there's this big operation that's going on in the background, and you have the poor chocolate teapot guy who at various points needs to be spun so he's not looking at what's actually going mm-hmm. on, needs to be encouraged so he doesn't just throw his flowers in the bin and go home.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool. So that you've got a heist movie going on at the same time as this kind of farcical blame it on the bellboy kind of scenario where part of the escape of the heist is the fact that the person who was the unwitting linchpin to the plan has no idea what happened. And if anyone tracks what's going on, they had a really weird whirlwind romance and actually connected with somebody else in weird, unexpected circumstances. Now read on.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like his payment for his unwitting part in the plot is that we actually hook him up with someone he'd be good for.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to do it on his own because he's crap.
That would be interesting. That would be very, very interesting.
Would it be a whirlwind romance with one person, or would they just set him up with a succession of really awful dates?
Oh, you know, things like sad.
Went to an art museum. The fire alarms got set off, and we got locked in one of the rooms. Went to on a boat trip. Some other horrible thing happens. They're just using this.
Well, maybe that actually is the heist. Maybe the first thing you said was right. So you have a job from, I don't know, senior.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. To get Junior a date that actually works. So you have these people behind the scenes basically arranging it so that he's trapped in a room with these poor people for long enough that presumably Junior's special qualities can shine through.
Whatever those happen to turn out to be.
Because we've seen, what, 4-5 seasons of Kim Possible and still don't know?
He's very good with his hair.
He does have good hair.
That's all I got. Also, did we just start laying out the groundworks for a scenario for the Kim Possible role-playing game?
I think we might have.
There's one of those already.
Please don't sue us. What?
Yeah, it's called Fate.
Yeah, get back in your box, fanboy.
When it's possible to use a show to explain game mechanics.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, okay.
I'll yeah. Okay, so yay, Riesel.
Yay, Riesel.
Woo! All right, we've got one from Will from possibly quite a while ago. Sorry, Will. Which I will read in its entirety because he says nice things about us.
Yay!
Hey, guys. I found your podcast recently and love it.
Woo!
I'm slowly working my way through the backlog and just finished Episode 8, Mecha Corps Receives Demobilization Orders. Having already finished Episode 12, Raised by Space Wolves, thanks to the Shuffle playlist being hit by accident. And I had an idea I wanted to share. The Mecha Corps in question has been on a hostile planet for several years and is trying to fight the very hostile native species in order to keep the city safe. As the Corps is far away from the city, they receive drops of supplies regularly, until one day, Sarge receives a message from the city saying that his crew is going to be demobilized. The problem is that they are demobilizing the tech mechs in 10 minutes, leaving the Corps on their own, little to no food or weapons, and they have to survive on this world without their mechs. Maybe they plan to head back to the city and get their revenge for being abandoned. Maybe they'll hike through the forest, teeming with dangerous creatures, to a fabled city on the far side of the world, scrounging along the way. Anyway, love the podcast and keep up the great work. Sincerely, your audience, Will.
Yay!
Yay!
That's kind of cool. I think that's the first one we've had for demobilization where it's not assumed that the party nick their mechs back.
Yeah,
true.
Just starting with the assumption that these guys don't have their mechs and are being forced to survive without. That's interesting.
Certainly is the goal of, as I understand it, everybody who has ever run a Palladium game where there was a Glitter Boy.
Get that player to take the fucking suit off?
Yeah, get them to take the damn suit off. Get out of the suit. Seriously. Yeah.
We have run into that in reverse from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a D&D game where we wound up hiking through a desert. And
on a horse with no name. I'll shut up.
But we were ambushed in various things, and the GM was making the assumption that we still had our armor on, and we were pointing out, no, we're hiking across a desert.
We would die.
We are carrying our armor. and I'm in a lot of trouble, actually.
Does the armor bonus still count if your armor was tied up in a bag and you were cowering behind the bag?
Yeah.
I think it probably counts as a tower shield at that point, but not much else.
Mm. Yeah.
Although you still have full encumbrance.
Yes, that whole thing of, you know, the party gets attacked over breakfast and it turns out that absolutely everybody was sitting there with all of their armour and wearing full plate.
I'm imagining what happens now when you have someone in full plate, complete with the headgear on, trying to negotiate the face grill with a spoon to get your eggs in.
I'm wondering if they just go with toast and, yeah, you know, he's got, like, the vertical slots.
He's just kind of post it through in. Vertically.
Yeah. What I was imagining was that face grill thing, and you can just see this kind of folded up waffle going... kind of, the grills are covered in whatever you've got on the waffle.
Syrup and a light dusting of sugar.
Yeah.
Your squire turns to you and say, "Shall I remove the wasp bait, sir?"
Yes, yes, we don't want a repeat of yesterday. It was a trifle awkward.
Okay, so a game where you're crossing, I'm guessing, non-human populated areas.
Mm.
When you're... would you be attempting to scrounge some things to build yourself new mechs, do you think?
I don't know. Okay, I'm going very weird and science fictional on it, but I'm assuming that... if the city can simply switch off the mix from remote,
mm-hmm.
that suggests that it's possibly some kind of beamed power system.
Ooh.
That, yeah, a bit like the Avas in Neon Genesis. They don't have enough power to run for very long. And so these mechs are out there sort of running on beamed, possibly orbital beamed or something power, and the city has simply switched them off. So they are so much scrap metal.
Okay. But you've still got people who are trained to work together, trained to fight, sort of. So you're looking for scaled-down versions of the weaponry that that your mechs carry, because that's what you're used to,
in order to get you away.
It's not like... if it's not a beamed weapon thing, but there is a kill switch, then there's a one-shot in sort of sneaking in to turn it back on.
Hmm.
The being able to turn it off by remote does remind me of a piece of artwork I saw a while ago where you've got this city and this park and you've got kids, boys and girls, rampaging around the place with little fighting robot toys and things. And except the camera is set far enough back that you realise that part of the incline of the slope of this park is on this titanic war machine that's only partly under the ground.
Built into the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that picture. That was cool.
I'm imagining that it would be a circumstance where, you know, assuming it's possible to communicate with the natives and they're not... I mean, they're obviously, to some degree, actively hostile to humanity, or possibly humanity just being a colossal pack of dicks to them. But,
Oh, you're thinking intelligent natives? As opposed to just impassable jungle that wants to eat you?
I'd kind of gotten the idea of intelligent natives, but I could be wrong. Then again, you could start riffing on... almost every thank you for saving us white man story out there.
Do we have to?
No, we don't.
But there is a rich history going back to John Carpenter of Mars.
Yes. John Carpenter of Mars would be a very different thing.
It was that movie with Ice Cube.
Sorry, John Carter of Mars. John Carpenter of Mars is something else entirely, and we can work on that later.
If you had alien, well, you could go with the aliens presumed to be only semi-intelligent, who in fact turned out to have a rich culture, etc., etc.
Ah, Little Fuzzy.
Yeah, and/or Avatar.
Mm.
You wouldn't want to be known as the guys who used to be inside the big mix.
That is true.
That would go badly. I'd want to have somebody other than the party to interact with, but that's only because I've never really understood how to run a game with the only obstacle. Is the environment. I don't know how to run one of those games and make it interesting.
Kind of becomes an above-ground dungeon brash. You've got a set destination, but you don't really have a clear idea of what's between here and there. It's sort of exploration and maybe a little bit of survival horror. If you've got swarms of animals you don't really understand, you're trying to figure out what water is safe. Okay, the occasional impassable marsh. Okay, I've just realised that I'm doing the last section of Lord of the Rings here, but... Yeah.
I thought that just occurred was that a lot comes from the reason that the mechs are suddenly turned off.
Mm.
So what if they've been out there, they've been fighting the good fight, they've been doing what they're told, then the mechs get turned off and they get abandoned, and it turns out because some sort of fairly dodgy peace treaty has been hammered out.
Okay.
That either these guys can see is going to be broken by the natives, or that these guys can see is actually the prelude to something just utterly horrible. And I mean, it would have to be fairly horrible if they've been out there kind of patrolling the borders and and smushing the greenies anyway, then what we're talking about has to be something in the genocide level.
Yeah. Humanity is offering a peace treaty so that they've got the time and the space to set up even bigger war machines.
Mm.
Or more effective war machines. Or
prepare some really good smallpox blankets. Or
yeah.
Go with the English approach to the Scots of let's set up a peace treaty. Great, we know who your leaders are. Let's kill everybody.
Yeah. I mean, again, it does turn very rapidly into the thank you for saving us white man genre.
Not a lot to be done about that, and there is some fun to be had playing it. So long as you're aware that that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Cultural imperialism, the RPG. Woo!
It's not like we haven't suggested that before.
Maybe we think too much about this.
Eh.
Yeah.
Anyway, very cool setting and idea.
Yeah.
I thought of anything you could do with it that wouldn't be the thank you for saving us white man thing.
Yeah.
Well, it would look like one to an extent, but figuring out that a lot of the conflict has actually been caused by a third party.
Oh, interesting.
Basically, as a poorly understood part of the ecosystem or landscape or possibly even another extraterrestrial thing, you basically have brain slugs.
Interesting.
And so the peace treaty thing would be a great opportunity to start investing officials on both sides from off-planet.
Okay. So at that point, your move is to get to a separate area that is not brain slug infested in order to get backup from both sides, hopefully?
You have to crash this peace treaty thing with the huge amount of security from both sides to say...
And do it without your mech switch. Kill switch.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll say, stop! All of these people have been infested with brain slugs! That is why they favour enormous subsidies to the brain slug planet. Why didn't we see this earlier?
Hmm.
Well, it would be an interesting one for why both sides on this planet were suddenly cooperating.
The question is, what happens if the party figure out a way to remove the brain slugs without just killing everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And the sides in question say, that sucked, let's cooperate, and it looks like they're still infected.
That would be a problem, yes.
Also, you're still left with the problem of if you remove the brain slugs and suddenly everyone's at each other's throats again. It's still not a good look.
No.
Yeah.
Well, if you figure out that people were at each other's throats initially because of brain slugs.
Mm. It would be a useful data point to key the rest of the game off. Yeah. Mm. So that was from Will?
That was from Will.
Awesome. Thank you, Will. I've got a short thing from Taz.
Woo!
Hi, Taz. On...
Foreign correspondent.
On Graboids Take Manhattan, where he says, running with Graboids in New York City... I'd suggest the game Dead Weight, which is a parkour versus zombie game / RPG. It could very easily stretch to replace the ground-dwelling zombies with our cuddly graboids. Slight interjection from one of our blinds.
I did go and look up Dead Weight.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an Apocalypse World hack. From the last time I looked, it was basically something that was being worked on, and then... Yeah, not having played Apocalypse World, I don't know whether it was finished, because I don't know what a finished Apocalypse World hack looks like. But it did have to do with, quite literally, how much weight you're carrying.
Interesting.
I think in terms of stuff and in terms of, shall we say, emotional baggage.
Okay, so there's a little bit of interpersonal drama to sort out as the game, and that also affects the kinds of jumps you can make?
I think it affects how things go. I mean, it's a bit difficult not having played Apocalypse World, so I have to get Ben onto that. that won't actually work, but yeah. Hopefully a game can happen at some point.
Eventually Ben will have time away from his job in order to run something.
Indeed, yes. I think he's quite looking forward to that notion.
Mm.
Possibly once he retires, you know.
Yeah.
Nursing home, maybe. So
maybe.
Come back in 20 or 30 years, it'll be awesome. But yeah, I mean, relationships between characters have mechanical... meaning within Apocalypse World to the best of my ability to figure out. So presumably they would have applications in this parkour versus zombies. I mean, in the setting that was suggested, you basically had this kind of ground-hugging fog, and so the only safe place is up the buildings.
And similarly with this, you have... Basically, it's a find and replace, isn't it? You've got graboids lurching out of the ground and they can only reach so far.
Indeed.
Assuming that they don't evolve.
They don't learn to fly.
Or yeah. Anything.
Were they flying graboids or just...
Trimmers 3.
Oh, they could fly in Trimmers 3?
Yeah.
Could they fly particularly well?
Kind of rocket-propelled gliding.
Don't ask about the rockets.
They were dubbed a very mature thing. Yes.
What were they dubbed?
Ass blasters.
I really do need to watch those movies. And possibly the series.
This does sound like a this is what we're doing when we're drinking and drinking of an evening type
alcohol
things to
couldn't
watch.
Hurt. And I'm reasonably confident we could get Gulo tea in on the watching the Tremors films while drinking.
And throwing popcorn.
And throwing popcorn. That's true. Throwing popcorn. Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. Possibly we do it as our first and probably only live stream. We just set up the... set up the microphone and record us listening to all three Tremors movies, or watching all three Tremors movies back to back.
I don't know, we could do it as a post-storm, in which I watch. Every time someone's got a comment, we tweet it.
So it'll be like the person who's immediately ahead of us in the cinema last night. Every time anything happened, they tweeted it.
That's got to be annoying.
Yeah, I just made sure not to look at the brightly glowing screen and it was fine. But yeah, parkour versus parkour versus graboids.
Definitely a thing.
It'd be kind of cool. I mean, especially if you bring in, at the very least, because I remember something where there's a critter that's jumped onto the hood of a car, which I think was from Tremors 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the ass-blasting flying ones, if you sort of specify that they can't actually go that high, would be an extra complication.
If you specify that they're gliders, then they've got a short blast to get height, and then it's all downhill.
And they're in urban canyons.
Exactly.
So that's... That sort of provides both a benefit and a hazard to rigging up static lines, like zip lines and that sort of thing, to getting between buildings. Because if the critters are only at ground level, then you can set up rope bridges and all sorts of stuff.
Mm.
But if potentially you've got flying things, then...
I think they have to be a rarity, so that every once in a while you might be picked off a Burma bridge, but...
Oh, I'm thinking possibly the rope bridges, on the one hand, probably aren't constructed in such a way so that one of the creatures could perch on them. Because I suspect you need to be quite a light creature in order to be able to perch on a cable.
Yeah.
Or have spectacular balance. So the rope bridges, from one point of view, leave you exposed to these creatures. On the other hand, if the creatures don't have good enough eyesight to pick out the rope bridges...
There's a chance that they will collide with them and crash to the ground where they will be eaten by their brethren.
Indeed. But you've probably also lost a rope bridge.
Yeah.
Or at least drastically weakened one.
Okay, so what are your aims in this game, do you think?
I think it's the standard staying alive. From memory, the dead weight thing, I think, had a mechanic of quite literally moving up in the world.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you're starting on 5-story buildings and trying to work your way into the city where you can get up to...
Or possibly just working your way up one of the really big buildings.
Huh.
Sears Tower. Or Phyllis Tower now, whatever it's called now.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Now I just had a flash on Gremlins 2.
No, with the Clamp building?
With the Clamp building.
That is a fantastic
Where the film. Lower levels are completely infested with tiny camp monsters.
Doing spectacularly choreographed song and dance routines.
Indeed.
And in at least in one case, wearing a little opera mask and a cape.
Da 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 da.
That was a silly movie. That was
a fantastic film.
Fire, destroyer of worlds, giver of life, fire is loose in this building. That was an awesome movie. Anyway.
Would the owner of the car with license plate XJ413 please remove it from the Clamp building car park? Your car is old and dirty. Yeah, I think if Ben can be prodded into running...
Apocalypse World. Facilitating
an Apocalypse World game, then the next step would be to find Dead Weight again and give that a try. Because it did look really interesting. It's just that, unfortunately, not having played the game...
We don't have the background to...
Yeah, I can't tell whether that's a complete thing that I found.
Because
it looked as though the guy who was making it sort of got to a certain way through and then decided, actually, I think this would work better as a board game. But I don't know whether it was enough through that, okay, all it really required was a bit of polishing up, or whether it was a case of... here's some nuts and bolts, please assemble your furniture.
Hmm.
Can't tell.
We can do that scrubbing.
Yeah.
It'll work.
Well, I've got one from XO4 for Mainstreaming Monsters. Apparently when XO4 heard the title Mainstreaming Monsters, he heard Mainlining Monsters initially and thought it was going to be about shooting at monsters like heroin, but that was incorrect. So here's the rest of it. I was, however, able to recognise two ideas that played well together. You had all the ideas of monsters in public schools, to one degree or another, and Quags, my favourite game system, has the Charles Fort High universe, which takes the concept of supers slash monsters slash aliens and the like, and recognises that they need to be given an education. The phrase that sticks out from the intro is, "Any child, human or not, born or constructed or spawned on American soil is an American citizen. That means they are required to attend school, and the government is required to school them. There are no government agents in black suits abducting paranormal babies so they can dissect them in labs. Instead, there are tired, overworked bureaucrats trying to deal with the increase in the nation's non-human population."
Okay, I just envisaged a class for xenomorph kids.
Oh, yeah. Yikes.
Got a bunch of adults lying on stretchers in kindergarten because kindergarten-level xenomorphs, the facehugger thing. Yeah. Still got to send them to kindy.
That's especially terrible. The rest of the message goes, "It's the whole overworked bureaucrat part that gelled in my mind with your Mainstreaming Monsters concept. Charles Fort High is about the students, but what about the overworked bureaucrats? It brings multilingual on the resume to different levels. I'm envisaging episodic adventures, maybe trying to having to convince the gelatinous cube that its recently deposited nub of single cellular regeneration has to attend school, even though gelatinous cubes don't have a language, but the offspring is of schooling age. Also dealing with the doppelganger, who's hiring itself out to cover for absences and exams."
Oh, lovely.
It seems like it could be quite fun. Not really that different than the whole law enforcement scenarios that you all came up with, but again, I enjoy creativity for a reason. I have to say, the Mainlining Monsters misunderstanding is what really captivated me, and I might use that for something at some point, assuming XO4 doesn't mind. But the Mainstreaming Monsters school concept from the perspective of the teachers sounds like it might have a lot of legs to it.
Yeah. Actually, just having the doppelganger person being not one of the kids sneaking into exams and stuff, but having them as a substitute teacher. So it's the perfect way to get around substitutitis.
Yeah.
You know how kids generally will give a substitute absolute shit
mm-hmm.
and attempt to break them. The kids never noticed there was a difference. The double gangster walks in and is the same person.
To all outward appearances. They seem a lot more cavalier because they're not going to get blamed for anything.
Yeah.
That could be cool.
Yeah. I own two different games that could run this.
Mm-hmm.
Do tell.
Well, there's Teenagers from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also School Days.
Ooh.
And that's leaving aside Quags as the XO4 pitches.
Indeed.
Okay, so your players are either the truancy office for a particular school, or maybe just the office, the people who work in the office for a particular school district. So you're providing substitute support, you're providing truancy setup, and maybe also providing...
Guidance counselling.
Guidance counselling. I was thinking new immigrant... What's the word I'm looking for? Tours? Settling in? Yeah. Seminars?
Acclimatization?
Acclimatization, that's the word. Yeah. It does sound like a trouble of the week kind of game, so it could go on for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah, if I was going to go with short, sort of one or two session, I would definitely go with School Days or TFOS.
Mm.
Something slightly more longer term, a little bit more serious, might need a better system. A better system for long-running games than those.
Possibly. Actually, I'm wondering with this, would you be running the school district as a separate entity from the human school districts? Or would you have, for want of a better word, co-educational classes?
I think it's co-educational.
Just because that's going to be more trouble.
Yeah. Nice.
Because you're trying to integrate, which means potentially that the staff in question are also integrated staff.
Nice. That is nice.
The head of the department's a real ogre.
No, really. He's an ogre.
That is where I think I would take it. So,
yeah, I'm wondering with a system like this where you would have effectively O-levels through whatever in common and elvish and...
High elven, dark elven.
Yeah.
Kobold.
Possibly some advanced classes in the magical languages.
Indeed, yes.
Or does that count as a science? I'm not sure.
No, the entire course in the language of the underground races.
Ooh.
Yes. Alternative chemistry. I mean, we are almost talking Harry Potter crossed with Buffy here.
A little bit, yeah.
But from the perspective of teachers.
True. Yeah, it would be nice to have something where you've got your regular, quite literal problem children. The difficulty of avoiding colossal in-jokes is so strong that I just wouldn't bother.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call.
You know, the gelatinous cube issue.
Indeed.
Yeah, we have no idea where the... yeah, we have no idea where all of the uniforms for the sports team went. On the other hand, the locker room looks fabulously clean.
A pattern is forming, Jimmy the Cube. Do I have to talk to your parent thing?
Yeah. What are you talking about? Coughs up a sock.
Although that could also be a problem for Jimmy the Cube. Is what do you mean you ate everybody's jock straps? Jock eater!
Yeah. It's alright, I can buff them back up. Hang on a sec.
It's alright. I also had the jocks that were wearing them.
It would add a new level of terror to stereotypical high school bullying.
Yeah.
It would.
How exactly do you punch the crap out of a gelatinous cube?
Painfully.
Or an obsidian?
With the gelatinous cube, I think you steal a lot of something base from the chemistry department.
Or just more gelatin.
Or more gelatin.
Pelting him with gelatin.
Set it hard. I don't know. I don't know how you pick on an obsidian, or how an obsidian would defend itself without creating enormous structural problems.
Indeed. I would not be able to run this in anything other than a comedic system. I'm sorry. I've been trying desperately to think of more serious approaches, and I can't. I've got nothing. The idea of Jimmy the Cube being marched into the disciplinary office with a half a dozen people wearing Letterman jackets with their arms stuck into them. They started it. He won't let go. I can't. I physically am not able to. I tried to warn you. Oh, Lord. All right. Somebody get the prying stick and the jock lube.
Ah. Playing any game from the point of view of the staff is going to be quite difficult, because anything that they do together is going to be between what they actually do for a job. So it's only going to be the big stuff that takes place during the session of the game. So maybe a one-shot that is parent-teacher night.
filled with flashbacks.
Yeah. And again, I'm getting an inspector's thing going on. So you've got bits to camera of the various teachers saying what happened next, or how they coped with it, or this is a thing that I could see starting to occur across the gym.
Or something very improv-y, yeah.
Mm.
All right, we have one from Thunderstep.
Yay, Thunderstep!
Woo!
Yes.
Thunderstep was the GM for a few Quags games. I played at Gen Con last year. So, yeah, only about 12 hours worth of games. And they were an enormous amount of fun. And we found out about the Quags system courtesy of the Gutter Skypes.
Mm-hmm.
And thus it was because of the Gutter Skypes that I decided I was going to play some Quags games at Gen Con. And enjoyed it so much I actually went back for a third one. I got tickets for two of them, and then when Thunderset mentioned that there was a third one, I went and...
You just turned up.
Turned up with a hopeful look and a generic for that one, and it seemed to work as well.
Sweet. And then the Gus Skypes told him about us.
Indeed. Yes, there was the weird moment of Thunderset running a Halloween game, I think, for the Gutter Skypes. And then getting him to read one of their letters, which turned out to be from Tonya, mentioning me, which was the point at which we figured he figured out that...
There was
holy
a connection
crap,
there.
He was in my game.
I'm fairly sure Alan did that on purpose.
I'd love to know how.
Well, maybe not then.
He has spooky powers, but...
He does have spooky powers.
All right, so, okay, from Thunderstep. The one idea that struck me from your past shows revolves around the space wreck idea. I love the concepts that you all threw out for this one, but I was surprised no one tackled the AI angle. What happens in a Sargasso or wrecking yard of derelict spaceships when the AIs are never deactivated properly?
Ooh.
What if the players enter said derelict field and suddenly encounter aware AIs that have been going since God knows when and have developed sentience? Can the players salvage something that claims to now be a living entity that does not want to be disassembled? Or even better, wants a more manageable body? This could be played comedically, straight, and even very dark and horrific depending on the GM and the players. You could have many warring AIs, a real OS war, if you will, or a blending of all of them into one huge consciousness. The name Many as One comes to mind here.
Ooh, that would be... that's awesome. If you've got a couple of entities who are saying, we can get you where you want to go, provided you can either salvage us better bodies, move us to better ships, or fix where we are, because we're kind of floating here bored.
Mm.
That's a fairly... it's a bounded game, because there's going to be smaller AIs that are also still awake, but not necessarily alive, to work around.
Mm.
If you're kind of at that point. But if it's been left long enough that all AIs are kind of merged, then a lot depends on how they feel about having been abandoned all that time.
Indeed. Yes, I'm getting very much...
and if they're Iwi Gaia, then you're probably fine so long as you don't kick down too many walls and actually take the time to negotiate. But I can think of a lot of parties for whom that could go very, very badly.
Very quickly. Yeah, I was getting very much a vibe off the multiple, you know, one or two AIs in there of very much a cutting a deal with the ferryman kind of vibe. That, yeah, I can take you to one of those. Of course, gonna need to repair my drives first.
And the automatic defense systems for the engine room, they're still online and they're not part of me.
Okay, so you could potentially do an enormous riff on Castle Heterodyne from the Girl Genius.
I'm a little comic. Bit fractured.
Yes, so yeah. If you've got the little bit fractured AI, I kind of like the entire swarm of ships, you know, every working sensor. Every fragment is part of the same distributed AI.
So anything you take out of it removes from its body.
Indeed. Though that suggests that whatever that Sargasso of ships is, it's been there for a very long time undisturbed. Or possibly that's the reason it's been there for a very long time undisturbed.
Which implies that there are parts that it needs to replace, and it's pulled your ship out of hyperspace in order to act as that bridge. So it's a negotiation to be let free, or at the very least be allowed to colonise.
Mm, if it wants working limbs.
If it wants working limbs.
Yes, the one or two AI'd ships, or possibly even a huge number of AI'd ships within the...
Separate entities.
Yeah, as separate entities within a very large floating junkyard. Strikes me as a little less creepy, but also... yes, I kind of like that negotiating with someone to get to places, and different AIs may have very different agendas.
Indeed.
In fact, probably should have very different agendas.
Well, they're different people.
Hmm.
Well, I suppose it depends on whether they can communicate.
It's more fun if they can.
So it's going to be like you're going from person to person in a village, trying to get things done, except everybody else... is in constant mental contact that you have no awareness of as players.
Eesh.
I don't know, that's starting to feel like negotiations might be happening above where you are. And I'm imagining various AIs taking a betting pool on how far you can get into the Sargasso. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a bit hazy on where to go with that one. I mean, I would be tempted to do it with the AIs... having less direct communication with each other. You know, they're not part of the same network, as it were. And so it's less a case of you are negotiating with one AI who is in communication with all of them, so much as they have vastly... yeah, a little bit like picking exactly which spirit to try to talk to, depending on what you want to get done.
Okay, so by which spirit you want to talk to, what context are we talking about there?
As in which AI. Think about... damn near any fantasy story where you have a rich panoply of spirits if you're trying to get a thing done, you want to talk to just the right one, the one whose goals and whose area of influence crosses over with what you want to do.
Okay.
And in this similar case, if you've got a number of wrecked AI ships, then they're going to want something from you. You're going to want something from the Sargasso. Maybe they can help you. Maybe they can't.
Mm.
Maybe they can stop you. Maybe they can't.
Okay. Starting to get the feel for this. So you've got an area where there's a huge amount of ships. Quite a number of them are completely done. Mm. Dead. Shut down. You have one end of the Sargasso where you're starting to get a many of one thing going on. And maybe that's the first person you meet. And their overall aim is to become the entire Sargasso. But there are other people there who would kind of like to stay independent, thanks.
Mm.
So it may well be that there's something you need in order to either fix your boat or negotiate your way out of the Sargasso, depending on how you got there.
Yeah.
That means either you throw your lot in with many of one or many in one and help that person extend themselves, or help a small cluster of the individuals to become mobile again so that they can boost you out of, that together they can boost you out of the
Sargasso. Out of the Sargasso. Yeah. Depending on how creepy you want it to go, you can maybe have the many as one being the whole swarm, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place, but it isn't every ship.
Interesting.
You know, you've managed to sneak in there, you're recovering something from a ship, and then this welding bot scuttles up to you and says, "Hey, mister, I got a proposition for you.
Help cut us free."
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this adds a new level of creepiness if you go with Traveller the New Era and Virus.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Come on, it caused no problems whatsoever with Traveller fandom when it got introduced as concept.
Where were you?
Firmly ignoring the enormous problems that various people had with the setting, up to and including a friend of mine who I think said, upon reading the New Era, if I wanted to play this, I would have just borrowed your copy of Dark Conspiracy. All right. There's also a thought, riffing off the Goblin Paradise episode. One of the personalities of a goblin that they're suggesting, or that Thunderstep is suggesting, is the fact that he's a classic goblin from the Dark Ages and hates what goblins have turned into via popular culture today.
Uh-huh.
Big-headed, snotty-nosed, sheep-brained twits would be how he describes any goblin from Tolkien onwards. So in this idea of Goblin Paradise, the players would be old-school goblins that have had enough of the classic RPG stereotype of green-skinned cannon fodder and are setting out to lobby for a return to what goblins should be.
Monsters.
The phrase ghosts and goblins had goblins in it for a reason, dammit, and they should be big names in terms of fear, chaos, and power plays again. Not just sideline minor threats, but true forces to be reckoned with. Again, this could be played as comedic or as dark as people want to go. Remember, in the old stories, goblins had no problem stealing and eating kids and adults. They were dark and terrifying, so this could be played up as a return to horror, or as a group of the comically inept goblins trying to live up to their glorious past. A return to a goblin paradise, if you will.
Interesting. Okay.
Hmm.
So they're trying to return the world to what it was.
Or at the very least, return goblin kind.
To what they used to be.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of scaritude.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And not pointy-eared, green, idiotic cannon fodder.
So you're in a technological world, a contemporary human environment, and I suppose it's up to the GM to decide whether goblin magic can foot it with that, or if the goblins are in for a nasty surprise when they break into someone's home and someone beams them with a toaster.
Ah, so you're going fully to the point where goblins are viewed to be even fictional, and
yeah,
they're trying to bring them back.
Yeah, I'm thinking a kind of a Home Alone one-shot or short, very short campaign of human family versus goblin, a small goblin horde who are trying to make a name for themselves in this world where they're considered to be fictional jokes.
Interesting. Okay, that's not where I went at all. So that's interesting. I mean, I do like the Home Alone vibe, just from the whole setting up traps and vaguely ridiculous chain of event type things, such as the Home Alone series.
Yeah.
I was imagining of a much more of a rabble-rousing, almost the Goblin Peoples United, where the various people trying to get their idiotic, city-dwelling goblin brethren in a stereotypical D&D fantasy world.
Uh-huh.
And trying to cajole them and persuade them and force them into becoming these terrifying creatures that they used to be. And frankly, it's shades of big...
Trying to stage a raid on a human village where most of the people that you're using as a part of this raid really don't want to be there.
Yeah. Well, shades of Big Fido from Discworld, who is convinced of this wonderful notion of wolves that never actually existed. And that all dogs are wolves, says the miniature poodle. Yeah, maybe not to that level of frothing insanity, but yeah, it's effectively the goblin uplifting movement. That goblins should be able to walk through the night, stalk through the night with their heads held high, kidnapping and eating children and stealing livestock and doing all the things that goblins used to do. Goblins shouldn't be working in bloody shoe factories.
Okay.
Or following the latest dark lord who happens to come along.
Falling in behind the nearest lich.
Yeah. That kind of thing. And potential. Oh, wow. I cannot decide whether...
It's a goblin separatist movement.
Yeah, I can't decide whether this is comedic or dark, but the idea of a small group of goblin separatists, goblin rights activists, however you want to put it, essentially going around to various Dark Lord's strongholds, sneaking in there to liberate their goblin brethren.
Who may or may not want to be liberated. I'm actually thinking that you could go quite serious with this and make it deeply moving and romantic. So have a whole kind of William Wallace thing going on, or...
So it's freedom, except in this case it's the freedom to be horrifying creatures of the night.
We is what we is.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I was getting more of a Jimmy Hoffa vibe, but yeah.
Your aim is, as players, is to get in, do a little bit of union organising, have your speech, give out your pamphlets and get out before the bruisers notice.
Hmm. Possibly breaking everybody out from their chains of servitude.
Which will work well if there are actual chains.
Yeah.
If it's simply economic chains, then you're probably going to have to do a little more work along the Malcolm X line.
Yes. Oh, wow. Sorry, I'm just trying to mentally rewrite the I Have a Dream speech for goblins. And it feels kind of sacrilegious, to be honest.
It is a little sacrilegious, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes. That went to a bad place.
It was why I said Malcolm X rather than Dr. King.
I am what I am. That's kind of cool. I do like the idea of grumbly old goblins saying that the young goblins are a complete letdown.
Mm. We should not be sweeping their caves. We should not be making their machines. We should be making our own machines, making moves in the world and making ourselves things to be feared.
So possibly you've got an empire-building game. Mm-hmm. Of putting together the first goblin empire. I mean, okay, you're going to start out small.
Yes.
One could argue that goblins already do. And and build up from there.
Well, maybe that's... The size thing is also a function of their place in the hierarchy. A la, I'm going to say, Warhammer.
Hmm.
If they were physically...
They are small because they are service creatures.
But if they grew...
Hmm.
So we're going with the goblins are kind of morphic and will... Yeah, when goblins start doing big scary things, goblins become bigger and scarier.
Yeah.
Nice. So GURPS goblins then?
Maybe.
Yeah. Or a very weird Warhammer fantasy game.
That would be a weird Warhammer fantasy game. But would leave the players with the ability to do all of the terrifying and horrible things that Thundercept suggests... Without, you know, falling to chaos.
True.
Because you can get away with a hell of a lot, as I understand it, without becoming tainted.
It's not a nice world. And, yeah, I haven't kept up with my editions of Warhammer Fantasy, but I think the general thing was that, you know, a neutral character in Warhammer Fantasy can quite cheerfully do stuff that would have evil characters in D&D saying, ugh, that's not wrong. yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's all I got for that one.
So, that's a big thank you to Taz, Hopeless,
Riesel, NX04,
and Thunderstep, and Blinkdog, and Will.
Yeah.
Woo!
Thank you so much for sending all that in. Sorry it took so long that we had to do them all in a big brain spew.
Otherwise, see you next time.
Yeah, and we look forward to hearing more from our audience.
Yes.
Indeed. Bye.
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 Next time on The Big Red Couch...
Puffa Leg Bar's Gumbo Hut.
Yoo-hoo-hoo!
Standing!
Yes!
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!